Welcome to the Zinnov Podcast. You're listening to our Business Resilience series, where we bring to you conversations between eminent industry stalwarts and thought leaders from across the globe as they discuss their insights on overcoming challenges and the mindset that helped them navigate the journey of crisis, resilience, and growth.
Welcome, everyone, to a new episode of the Business Resilience series of the Zinnov Podcast. I'm your host for today's session, Pari Natarajan, the CEO of Zinnov. Today, we are speaking to Amit Farnas, the Chief Innovation and Technology Officer at RapidAR, a visionary leader at the intersection of technology and healthcare. Amit has been instrumental in driving product, R&D, engineering, and technology advancements in healthcare and creating products that play a pivotal role in neurovascular, vascular disease care, and beyond. A global expert on medical imaging analysis, Amit works to deliver software tools to healthcare professionals around the world to successfully identify and diagnose cerebrovascular disorders using artificial intelligence. Welcome, Amit. We are thrilled to have you here.
Thank you, Zinnov. I'm glad to be here.
So tell us a little bit about RapidAI. What does your company do and what is the role of AI in healthcare innovation?
Yeah, I think you already sort of articulated that, but we are a company, we are an AI and healthcare company, first and foremost. We've done a lot of work in the stroke area, but essentially, as you said, you know, we are in the neurovascular disease space, but more particularly, everything that we do is in the critical care and acute care area. So time is of essence. Therefore, a lot of things that we do are basically for acute condition patients, different types of strokes. We also have products in brain aneurysm, pulmonary embolism, and then similar other disease states from a vascular perspective. I think Rapid, you know, has been pretty successful over time. We are deployed in more than 2,250 hospitals globally. We process about 14,000 scans every day, and that number grows, you know, basically every day. You know, our yearly sort of growth has been 30% year on year on number of scans. We've done more than 10 million scans already. But I think what's of real relevance is that we've identified more than a million patients for life-saving procedures as a result of, you know, all of the work that we do. We also have a mobile app, and obviously, you know, to support the, you know, both execution as well as delivery of the AI results, we have a platform which is actually pretty comprehensive. The mobile app is one way to sort of for the clinicians to actually consume the results of AI, and the app also has, in addition to the AI results itself, imaging, image viewing, as well as workflow related tools. Right.
In what you're doing. And what is the role of AI? Give us a little bit use cases and how you've been using it so far.
Yeah, I think AI plays a pretty pivotal role. Now, we call ourselves a deep clinical AI company because in healthcare, you'll find, you know, different types of AI algorithms or tools, right? There are what are called basic triage and notification tools or triage and notification algorithms. Wherein you are basically saying to the clinician that you're suspecting something, but you cannot really go beyond that. But we have a number of algorithms which go way beyond, you know, triage and notification. And we'll talk a little bit more about that. You know, that's why we call ourselves deep clinical AI in the stroke space itself. If you run all of these algorithms on the HCloud platform, we can now run them in parallel. So within 6 to 7 minutes, we can actually produce all of the outputs from an AI perspective and then deliver it on a clinician's mobile phone. We can send emails. We can also notify them on PACS, for example. But there are many mechanisms by which the results can be consumed from an AI perspective.
God, so it's very interesting. It's mission critical, and the physicians are using you to make those very critical decisions in a very short period of time. And RapidAI has been around for the last few years, but the AI-led innovation seems to have accelerated in the last 12 months. Is there something changed in terms of how you're using some of these newer algorithms And how are you leveraging some of these algorithms?
Yeah, actually, obviously, there is a realization that AI can play a big role, right, in healthcare in general. But very specifically with respect to image analysis, as well as, you know, the ability to sort of diagnose disease states. But I think what, you know, we saw this at multiple conferences, including RSNA late last year, that a number of clinicians are now saying that, look, just triage and notification algorithms are not good enough, right? Because, you know, just saying that there is a suspected stroke doesn't necessarily, you know, provide them the information that they need, right? So they need a lot more, you know, than, you know, just a suspicion of a disease, right? And typically, what they're looking for is, are you able to sort of isolate where the problem is? Are you able to then, you know, quantify, characterize the disease as well as quantify the disease? So can you take measurements? Can you characterize, right, you know, either tissue type or disease state very specifically, and localize that disease, right, to a specific area of the anatomy? All of this is very important for a clinician because, you know, this is where actually they end up spending a lot of time. Sometimes, you know, it is not very clearly visible on the images, right? And therefore, if an AI algorithm can actually throw light on, you know, these type of aspects and provide them the necessary measurements, the localization, the characterization of tissue, it then becomes a very impactful thing from their perspective.
So coming into the kind of new innovations which has happened, right? Right now, with the generative AI, it's a lot more probabilistic. It's not going to give the same answer every single time. But is there a use in a healthcare, you need to be a lot more deterministic on how these algorithms work. Are you able to leverage some capabilities of the Gen AI into your traditional healthcare capability?
Yeah, very interesting question, Pari. We have been sort of exploring this area pretty significantly, as I'm sure many other companies are, right, at this point in time. Now, look, Gen AI can certainly play a role, but I think we have to be careful about this, right? Because I think this is my view that, you know, we are still quite some distance away from, you know, creating a generative AI algorithm in a diagnostic space, which would be cleared by FDA, right, as a clinical diagnostic algorithm, right? And the reason for that is there is still some concern about the generative AI being, you know, of generative AI hallucinating at times. And that absolutely cannot happen when you're in a diagnostic area. But I think there are many other places where Gen AI can be actually applied, you know, pretty effectively, right? You know, I think in general, you can say that wherever there is information required, okay, that could very easily be done through generative AI, right? So you could have intelligent chatbots, right? You can have, you know, you can feed in a lot of information, including literature and books and things like that, so that there is a very quick reference available. That's just one example. But there's also a lot of work being done in the generative AI space with images and imaging in general. Now, although diagnostic algorithms using generative AI may be a little bit away, you know, in terms of our ability to get an FDA approval, but I think we can definitely use these techniques to, for example, generate synthetic data, right?
Sure.
Because there are a number of algorithms available now in the generative AI space, which work with images pretty effectively. And that actually is a pretty important tool, you know, if you want to sort of train algorithms, because real world data is hard to come by, right? And not everybody has access to it. So at least from a training perspective, you know, you could sort of use generative AI to, you know, create synthetic data that can be then used to train the algorithms. Now, you know, for validation, you cannot use that, obviously, because FDA requires you to sort of validate your algorithm on real world data, not just that, but data that has a lot of, you know, variety in it coming from different geographies and things like that. But there are pretty interesting applications of generative AI already in the AI space in healthcare.
It's interesting you say, even I thought because of the probabilistic nature of generative AI, right? They're not much, but could be there are edge cases you're able to leverage it effectively.
I think for synthetic data, there is quite effective usage of this, right? Because you could use any of these imaging related Gen AI algorithms to actually, you know, create, you know, images, collage images essentially, right? Or combine images to create artifacts, you know, or images with artifacts or specific disease states and things like that. And then use those to sort of train the algorithms. That's a pretty, you know, pretty straightforward use case, you know, from a generative AI perspective.
Got it. And AI is in less regulated industries like e-commerce, media, it's a lot easier, right? What are other healthcare specific challenges? We talked a little bit about it when we discussed the Gen AI piece, but are there other healthcare specific challenges in adopting AI-led innovation?
Yeah, I think, see, look, you know, for AI to be useful, right, one, it needs to be precise, right? The sensitivity, yeah, specificity requirements in healthcare are very high because, you know, if you produce an algorithm which has a sensitivity and specificity of 90% each, the number of false positives and number of false negatives are pretty significant, right? You're essentially talking of 10% false positives and 10% false negatives, which can be pretty high occurrence rate, right, for a clinician. That reduces the trust on the AI algorithm pretty significantly, right? So that's one, you know, pretty significant barrier in healthcare. The second thing is, it's not good enough to sort of say, we suspect something, okay? For it to be really useful for a clinician, for a radiologist, for example, right? Burnout is a big issue, okay? So you have to really help them, you know, reduce the time that it takes for them to actually read an image, for example, right? Or be able to diagnose something or write a report. And that requires us to do a lot more than, you know, just be able to sort of suspect something, right? It's not very useful to reduce the burnout or the burden on the clinician. So you have to be able to localize it. You also have to be able to quantify it. So there is a lot of variability that comes in. And in spite of all of that, you have to be able to do all of these things correctly, right? And I think that's what makes it very, very difficult, right? And the requirement for high accuracy is very high. And then you have to go beyond a basic suspicion, right, into localization, characterization, and quantification for it to be really, really useful. And all of this combination makes it much tougher. I would say to add to that, the real, I mean, okay, fine, right? If you have unlimited data set, you can always do all of this. But, you know, there is no unlimited data, real world data, right? You know, and the more peculiar or the more specific the disease state, the more difficult to get real world data, right? So that makes it very challenging.
Very, very interesting. And it looks like, you know, it is quite challenging, but why should, you know, right now the job market is very hot for talent with AI skills. So how do you find and retain talent at this time for driving, especially around healthcare, especially around fast-growing startup like Rapid AI?
Yeah, I mean, I as you said, right, there's a high demand for talent. Now, one thing that benefits the healthcare industry in general is the sense of purpose, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, I think we at Rapid AI, you know, we know that every minute of work that we put in, you know, we'll end up probably saving a patient, right? And maybe saving an extra patient, right? Through the work that we are doing as we continue to improve the algorithms. And I've seen engineers being extremely passionate about this, right? Because they know the direct impact that they are creating. Every algorithm that you develop, right? Or every time you upgrade or update an algorithm, make it more specific, make it, you know, more precise in some way. You know that you are literally going to positively impact thousands and thousands of patients, right? And I think that's a great thing about, you know, being in this space, that the sense of purpose is really, really strong. And, you know, you typically find that once people get into it, right, they're pretty passionate about, you know, what they do, and they want to continue to improve what they're doing, right? Because they know that every single time there is an improvement that sort of goes towards saving somebody. And some
level, they join for the kind of technology you're working on, but they stay for the domain and purpose the company will develop.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
And how is the team? And, you know, you set up a tech hub at GCC in India. How is that team able to help in driving the innovation, especially a lot of this work you do is largely for the US market?
Yeah, I mean, see, look, you know, we have a pretty significant investment in Bangalore, right? I mean, we are a relatively small company, but, you know, given that, you know, we started, you know, the Bangalore operations about maybe roughly 1.5 years back. Look, we were very clear right up front, right? We do not look at this as Bangalore or US or, you know, where the engineer is working. For us, it's all about, you know, what talent we have and what is the work that needs to be done. And right up front, we were very clear that we are going to put, you know, certain complete, you know, sort of ownership responsibility in Bangalore. And in fact, the whole Edge Cloud platform, almost 80-90% of that has been done out of Bangalore, right, over the last 18 months, which is actually pretty significant because, you know, that's a platform on which we sort of orchestrate all of these algorithms that we are talking about, right, including the mobile backend and so on and so forth. We are now continuing to invest in the mobile, you know, application space, right, in Bangalore. And I think that investment will continue. So our sense is that given the talent that's available in Bangalore, we have an opportunity to do more and more there as we also grow the teams in the US, okay? But we are very clear that it, you know, the work that we do is independent of the geographies, right? So it's not like this type of work can go to Bangalore or some other work can stay in or needs to be in the US. We move very fast. We are a, you know, sort of late stage startup, I would say.
Yeah.
Although we are heavily deployed and pretty successful, right, from a clinical evidence perspective, we do pretty significant work in every geography that we are in, and Bangalore is no exception.
Got it. So it's and it's interesting that, you know, you just look at them as common pool of talent, and which you, and you have a set of workload you need to get done, and you just get done with this talent. There's no major separation in the quality of work these teams work on. And when talent joins RapidAI, what can they expect in terms of their learnability?
Yeah, look, you know, typically what we have found is that the learning curve is pretty steep, right? We are absolutely at the edge of technology here, right? I mean, we are pushing the envelope, right? Whether it is with FDA, whether it is, you know, in terms of the technical challenge that we have taken on, the disease state that we are working on, you know, and things like that. And as I said, right, we are deep clinical AI, right? So everything that we do has a lot of depth in it, right, in terms of what we are trying to do in healthcare. So whether it is technology, whether it is the clinical knowledge base, okay, whether it is the workflow tools, they're absolutely sort of pushing the boundaries of the respective areas, correct? And the last thing is we're deployed heavily. So, you know, it's not something that's like deployed in 10 hospitals or 15 or 20 sure. or even 100 or 300, right? We are in 2,250 hospitals. The clinicians use our products day in and day out. We get instant feedback, right, on what's going on with our product, okay? And it is saving lives, okay? So, what it means is if you're joining, you know, someone joins RapidAI, right, the amount of, you know, awareness and learning that they go through is unparalleled in the industry, right, in general. And then the work that you do is, there is nothing like that. We don't have, you know, work quality issues, right? We are, you know, we are challenging the teams, you know, so much, right, that they're thrilled with, you know, the type of work that they do. And I think that's no exception in Bangalore. I mean, the work that has been done in Bangalore on the Edge Cloud is just absolutely phenomenal. It's a absolutely top-end platform for AI, okay? It's been developed in record time. It's getting deployed as we speak, you know, at pretty large scale in the industry. And it's carrying all the workloads that we are talking about, but it's also pushing the boundaries in terms of parallel processing, you know, sustainability, security, as well as, you know, serviceability of the platform, right? So every aspect of the platform is right up there, actually.
Yeah, and then they get to work on the top technology in a fast-paced startup in meaningful work with high purpose, right? I think that's a great combination for people to, you know, work in RapidAI. My final question, Amit, it seemed like the AI innovation wave was again started to accelerate, right? What are some of the AI-led healthcare use cases you look forward to in the next 2 to 3 years?
Yeah, I mean, see, look, you know, the promise of AI in healthcare is that irrespective of where you are in the world, right, you should be able to get exactly the same high quality, you know, treatment, independent of which part of the world you are in, you know, what economic strata you belong to, which hospital you go to, whether it is equipped or not equipped. I think that's really the promise of AI, right? That it normalizes the healthcare expertise or the clinical expertise across the globe, and it makes it accessible, you know, to the remotest areas as well as to the most developed countries, right, at the same time. Now, if you look deeper, the other promise of AI in healthcare is that if you are able to detect disease states very early in the disease evolution, that upstream effect is pretty significant, because at that stage, if you have clearly identified the disease, first of all, the prognosis for the patient is absolutely much better, right? You know, access to healthcare is still a big challenge. But as we sort of start moving, you know, disease detection in the upstream at very early stages, cost reduces dramatically. You know, the treatment prognosis improves, you know, very significantly, right? And it just makes healthcare a lot more equitable.
Thanks a lot, Amit. Thanks for sharing your insights on how AI is used in healthcare, the key challenges could create, and the opportunities it creates for high quality talent, where they're able to work on things which can give them a higher order of purpose compared to other industries. And finally, how AI could truly make healthcare equitable for people across the world. All of these are very insightful. And thanks again for sharing your perspectives.
Thank you, buddy.
Thank you for tuning into this episode. We'll be back soon with another leader, another exciting episode. Till then, take care and stay curious.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the Business Resilience Series. Stay tuned for more such interesting episodes. You can listen to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Google Podcast, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcast from. To know more about Zinnov, visit our website, www.zinnov.com, or drop us a note at info@zinnov.com. Follow us on Twitter @Zinnov for regular updates on our content. Thank you again for listening to the Business Resilience Series of the Zinnov Podcast.